Almost worth saying is Question Time Review. You've entertained me. Dominic Lawson, Rupert Murdoch employee. Question Time, the 6th of January, 2021. The panel, Nadim Zardawi, Conservative, Annalise Dodds, Labour. Mark Walport, Sage Scientist. Humphrey Cobbold, CEO of Puregym. Rachel Clark, author and doctor. The venue, London. Unhelpfully, Wednesday evening was punctuated by Fiona Bruce presenting the surprise last-minute Question Time lockdown special on a different day than usual and at a different time than usual. More unhelpfully, it didn't appear on the iPlayer, and the edition on the online schedule was dated December the 17th, 2020. Simultaneously, one's timeline lit up with all sorts of shenanigans from over the pond. Friends from the Stetson-wearing and station-wagon-driving communities informed me that it really was happening this time, with the Capitol building being overrun by voters and taxpayers. One wag commented that at least during the 1812 burning of Washington, the Redcoats had had to actually fight their way in. The puffin is a resourceful bird. We shall cobble a review together all the same. We will avoid description by typing "Now you know how King George felt" into social media and then switching it off. The first question was, there appears to be a huge blockage in our ability to deploy the vaccine effectively. Why can't we do better? Nadim Zardawi, Conservative, accentuated the positive, claiming that a quarter of those over 80 had already been vaccinated and that in a few weeks' time they would have the maximum protection when that vaccination really began to take effect. Could we have moved faster? Asked key worker Fiona Bruce. Zardawi conceded that there had been a limitation because of vaccine delivery. 50% of the Pfizer vaccine had been held back because of the regulator, the committee and the chief medical officers. In other words, everybody except Nadim Zardawi, who happens to be the vaccine czar. They had preferred a 12-week interval between doses rather than 3 weeks, but since Monday, he assured us, there were gazillions of doses available, not least because of the Oxford vaccine, which had now arrived. There was a target, an ambitious target. Cohorts would be covered by the middle of February. The second rather loaded question was, how many more lives had to be lost to COVID before the government decided to call this third lockdown? We're in a race between getting people vaccinated and this new, more transmittable variant, said sage scientist Mark Walport. Tweedily dressed, like the kind of scientist who might ordinarily spend clear January nights spotting something unusual coming from Mars. He judged the supply of vaccine to be very limited. Therefore, we needed the maximum protection from the doses that we've got. He mumbled about Pfizer, Biotech 1 and AZ 1 a few times, as if referring to Martian rockets. It made sense to have 12 weeks between doses, he said, before adding, rather ominously, presuming they live to get it. He was looking at it carefully, as was yet another committee. The man from Sage nodded sagely, as if trying to convince himself the smoking canister crashed on the heath contained nothing more dangerous than a trapped man. Humphrey Cobbold, CEO of Puregym, said he had 270 sites across the country. Not surprisingly, he was keen to get them open again promptly. Each was typically the size of 3 or 4 tennis courts, he boasted. He employed 3,500 staff, all of whom were being paid by the government, i.e. the taxpayer, i.e. you, through furlough. His business had been battered by the virus. He wanted to see the country come through this and offered to provide resources to government if they told him what they required. The camera cut to Nadim Zardawi, who was nodding contentedly, as if sizing up a business opportunity. Let's accelerate the process and be truly ambitious, continued Humphrey. If we can do 1 million vaccines a week, why can't we do 2 million a week, or 3 million a week, or 4 million a week? He considered there to be enough good people of goodwill in the country to be able to make that happen. Nadim smiled like a salesman at a global mugs convention. Previously on QT Review, we have covered Nadim's business interests, a summary of which can be found in the 4th of June 2020 Southampton Review. Amongst other things, Zardawi has acted as a very well-paid middleman between his native Kurdish administrative area's oil concessions and the Caribbean tax havens. He has also accumulated a property portfolio valued in excess of £25 million. Just after that QT programme, on the 10th of June 2020, another company was set up called Zardawi Warren, with, as per his previous property companies, his wife as a director in the name of Ms. Lana Fawzi Jamil Saib. Zahawi himself was not a director of this new company, presumably as he was now a cabinet minister. The other two directors are Mr. Ahmad Shansal and Mr. Jafar Shansal. Jafar Shansal is aged 23 and went to Mr. Zahawi's old school, King's College School, Wimbledon. Mr. Shansal, like Mr. Zahawi, has experience in the oil industry. Could they be in some way related? Yes, they are father and son. Likewise, Armand Shansal is also a son of Mr. Zahawi. Previously, similarly named Zahawi businesses, Zahawi Briley Hill, Zahawi Wantage, have been set up in order to hold properties in those areas. Not so with Zahawi Warren. The day after incorporation, Zahawi Warren's name is changed to Warren Medical Limited. Unusually for a Zahawi business, its name no longer includes the word Zahawi. An article in Monday's, the 4th of January's Byline Times, informs us that Zahawi's family interest in this business is not declared in Zahawi's December 2020 list of parliamentary members' interests. Byline Times adds that the experience of the Zahawi family in healthcare is also unclear. Should we shine a little light on the Zahawi's experience in healthcare? I think we should. In 2013, Zahawi's son, Jafar Shansal, was employed as a researcher by, Matthew Hancock MP, the current Gormless Minister for Health. Meanwhile, younger brother Ahmad Shansal, despite being the director of a medical company, was still at university in 2019 at Princeton, the alma mater of his older brother. Studying at the sociology department, he did his thesis on Brexit. Why did it happen? And what can we learn from it? A contributor from the audience said that he had lost his mother to COVID on the 9th of April, aged 58. He added that there was a photo of her on the wall behind him. It was tastefully surrounded by vases of lilies. But your reviewer would be neglecting his onerous task if he omitted to mention, somewhat tastelessly, that she did look a bit more like QT review favourite Diane Abbott. The audience member added that there are more than 76,000 families out there that are grieving the loss of a loved one. He expressed support for key workers, especially the nurses who had held his mother's hand as she passed. One sympathises with his loss, but his language sounded rather practised. His mother had messaged just before she died to praise the nurses, but say that they were completely overwhelmed. He claimed there were now 30,000 in intensive care units fighting for their lives. Rachel Clark, author and doctor, reminded us that in the last 24 hours, over 1,000 people in the UK lost their lives to COVID, which she claimed as being more than every single person who has died in Australia during their entire pandemic. It would have been more accurate for Rachel to say that over 1,000 had died of various causes, having tested positive for COVID in the last 28 days, which is how the statistics are measured. Rachel also forgot to say that according to Oxford University's Our World in Data project, the 7-day rolling average for deaths in Europe per 100,000 population is as follows. First, Lithuania, 34. Second, Croatia, 13.36. Third, Slovakia, 16. Fourth, Czech Republic, 12.74. Fifth, Hungary, 11.65. Sixth, Bulgaria, 10.22. Seventh, the United Kingdom, 10. As often, a particular type of contributor to these BBC programmes tends to exaggerate the extent to which this has affected Britain and misses out countries where it's had a greater impact. Rachel did say that conditions in hospitals at the moment are unimaginable, with ambulances queuing up outside containing patients who couldn't enter as every single bed in intensive care on the wards and in A&E was full. Just like every winter, Rachel. Rachel had had a message to say that police cars were delivering critically ill COVID patients into a hospital in London because there were no ambulances. Makes a change from the police cars being full of the mentally ill that even the Guardian newspaper suggests the NHS no longer helps. Rachel blamed the government for allowing things to get so bad. Others might place at least part of the blame on the NHS. She said Sage had asked for a circuit breaker in September and for a lockdown subsequently. She claimed that Boris Johnson was pathologically incapable of making a difficult decision and that that was reprehensible. An audience member spoke. She said that she was part of a medical team and that everyone was exhausted. She said that people were being found dead on the wards. People dying in hospital? Surely not. People are being found dead in intensive care, responded a staggered Bruce. No, people on the wards. By the time the critical care team get to them, they've already died. If we'd gone into lockdown earlier... Her voice trailed away to nothing, as if realising that minds immeasurably superior to ours looked upon the NHS with envious eyes while they slowly but surely drew up their plans. At this point, I will inform you of what my spies on the inside inform me. Our local district hospital has well over 400 beds. 400 of them are currently occupied, 100 occupied by COVID patients. Remember, these are patients tested positive with COVID over the last 28 days. They may now be suffering from something else. They may have caught COVID in hospital. Back in the day, 30 years ago, we had far more beds. I would put it at 600 plus. In the intervening time, the number of beds has gone down significantly, while the amount spent has rocketed, as has the number of staff. Draw your own conclusions. The next question was, do you think the government was right to wait until the first day of term to announce school closures? Annalise Dodds, Labour, said that lots of things hadn't been put into place. She mentioned the lack of e-learning. She's wrong. There is endless e-learning. There is nothing but e-learning. Even in ordinary times, the students teach themselves at home, mostly online, with the help of homework. I recall a very experienced education professional acquaintance of mine describing school as crowd control, with study at home being the actual learning. Miss Dodds said that there wasn't proper educational provision during the first lockdown. She's wrong again. There was e-learning, Zoom-type remote teaching and private study. Schools remained open for key workers' children and the vulnerable. The children are not helpless. Left to their own resources, there is no good reason why they cannot thrive. Annalise said we needed a plan for reopening. If you have a crystal ball which will predict vaccines, strains, R8s and the like, then log on to Annalise's Zoom and let her look into it. As ever, the trade unions have far too much influence upon what Labour politicians say. Our next question was, Rishi Sunak said he would do whatever it takes to support small businesses. When did the government change from this? Another silly, loaded, catch-out, smart-aleck remark, thinly disguised as a question. An audience member had her own solution. The cameras returned to the first questioner. Before you ask, she wasn't a stick insect. She informed us that, I took full advantage of Eat Out to Help Out. I think I actually ate at 22 restaurants in August alone. Proudly giving herself obesity and diabetes in order to help the NHS, she must be a public sector worker. It was rather like listening to Lenny Henry proudly announce that his ex-wife, another member of the Eat Yourself Thin community, had been helping Comic Relief starving Africans by stuffing her face every day for decades.